Just received confirmation the recording has started. Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the second webinar of today of the CWG Stewardship towards a final proposal. And I'll leave you in the good hands of Jonathan Robinson, one of the co-chairs of the working group. Jonathan, over to you.
Thank you, Marika, and hello, everyone. Welcome to the second of these two webinars telling you about the work, progress, and ultimately the final proposal of this cross-community working group. This is just to note that this 1300 UTC webinar that we're in now is being interpreted live by a request in French and Spanish, so should you wish to listen in either of those languages, that is available to you. All final documents will be translated, including the slides, and we will take questions that you may pose in the chat or raise your hand at the end of the webinar in order to ask clarifying questions or make your input known. So this is a point in time in this group's work where we are now at a position to submit the final proposal, to pass it on to the groups that chartered the work of this group, and to give them opportunity to consider it before and during the forthcoming ICANN meeting in Buenos Aires. Of course, this will be recorded, and all of the chat sessions will be archived. And as you can see in the top right, if you would like to speak, raise your hand and your microphone will then be enabled in order to allow you to speak. It's probably most orderly to take things at the end of the meeting, at the end of the presentation, but if you do think there's something particularly urgent to cover, it's possible we can cover it during the course of the presentation itself. So there is a diverse and comprehensive group that's worked on this over a sustained period of time. Technically, there were 19 members representing the different organizations that chartered the work of the group, but the group was open to participants and has had 133 participants. You can see the diversity of origin of those members and participants in the map in the center of your screen there, and also the different organizations from which they derived or were affiliated with. Asia-Pacific was the most active region in numbers, and the GNSO was the most active region, active group by number, but you can see it's pretty well spread. There's been many, many meetings, many hours of volunteer work spent on all of this, and an average number of pretty high attendance, and I'm pleased to see that many of you are contributing to this by your attendance at today's webinar, which is great. So this is clearly part of a process. The CWG, this group, is responding to a request for proposals from the ICG, who put out a request for proposals and sought input from the different communities who use the IANA functions. This proposal deals with the response and requirements of the named community who are using the IANA services in respect of TLDs, top-level domains. The ICG will seek to make coherent these three proposals from this group, the CRISP and the IANA plan teams. We have had the advantage in this group of being aware of the earlier submission of the CRISP and IANA plan submissions, and in so doing have had the opportunity, to the extent that it was possible, to seek to make ours as coherent as possible and therefore ease the passage through the ICG. It's not to say that we have done the work of the ICG or indeed that there aren't some wrinkles to be ironed out, but nevertheless, it's been useful being aware of those proposals. And in fact, the chairs of the different groups have had some opportunity to talk amongst one another, and indeed together with the chairs and or members of the ICG. So the ICANN board confirmed in Singapore that they would not alter the ICG proposal and would simply pass it on to the NTIA, but NTIA were concerned and have said that they would like to be sure that this proposal has the consensus of the community, and so hopefully it will have that as it passes through the various steps. A critical component which we'll touch on in quite a bit more detail is, of course, that this group has focused on many of the operational and practical aspects of making sure that the post-transition IANA is effective and functioning and provides ongoing quality and continuity of service. But many were rightly concerned that in the absence of the NTIA oversight and stewardship of the IANA function, there was a requirement to substantially revisit ICANN accountability. And in the end, as things worked out, the bulk of that work was moved into the work of the so-called CCWG, the Cross-Community Working Group, working on enhancing ICANN accountability. But necessarily, that work has had to be closely linked with the work of this group in order to ensure that it was coherent, and particularly that the needs and requirements of this group were met by the overarching work of the CCWG. So ensuring that we're clear on the goals and scope and requirements of this work, clearly the goal was to produce a response to the request for proposals from the ICG that adequately responded to that and met the requirements of the naming community in general. And of course, critically, was met the requirements of the CWG, that's this group's work, met the requirements of the chartering organizations for this group, which you see in the mid left-hand side of the slide in front of you, the CCNSO, the SAC, the GNSO, the ALAC, and the GAC. There was an awareness from the outset that GTLD and CCTLDs are, of course, primary customers or direct consumers of the IANA naming services, and so special attention was paid during the course of the work to the requirements of those group, of those customers, if you like, direct consumers of the services, without in any way compromising the multi-stakeholder nature of the group's deliberations, and indeed the eye this group had on the future multi-stakeholder nature of what would be required. So we took a list of 11 functions as are outlined in the NTIA IANA functions contract, that's the existing contract, and focused primarily on functions 2 to 9, which you see defined there in the scope of those, in that those apply to names, and that's the scope of this group. It became apparent early on, in terms of dealing with the requirements, that there was satisfaction with the existing IANA department performance. That is not to say that there aren't opportunities for improvement in various ways, but in general, the view was, and this was borne out by public comment, as well as the views of the group, and therefore that ICANN should remain as IANA functions operator immediately post-transition. And so it therefore fell on us to make sure that to start to think about what the post-transition situation would require. And where we ended up going towards was that it would require a contract with many similarities to the current IANA functions contract, that accountability mechanisms would need to be placed on or developed with on ICANN with respect to these IANA operations, and that it would make sense to further insulate the operational and policy-making responsibilities and protections for the IANA functions operator as an operational entity within what many view to be a policy-making environment. So, in addition, a mechanism was and is required to approve changes to the root zone environment. And of course, critical will be the ability to ensure adequate funding of the IANA functions in future by ICANN. And significantly, and ultimately, the ability for the multi-stakeholder community to require the selection of a new operator of the IANA for the IANA functions if and when absolutely necessary. But I should emphasize that this point on so-called separation has drawn a lot of attention and is critical in many participants' eyes, but is nevertheless, should it occur or need to occur in future, it is at the end of a long multi-stage escalation process and should not be viewed lightly for all sorts of reasons, including the ultimate security and stability of the systems on which this community and industry rely. So we focus here in this next slide on a little bit of initial progress. And whilst some of this might seem almost quite a long time ago by now, it's been an intense period, and it's worth drawing out a couple of areas from the early work of this group, which commenced around October last year. In particular, the point that if you look in that box on the lower left, the outcome from public comment. Now, we've run two substantial public comment periods during the development of this work, and some key takeaways came out of that. The general satisfaction with the IANA services, the preference for ICANN to retain the IANA operations, but crucially, a requirement to have expert and independent legal advice on what a post-transition IANA structure might be. It took a while to get that traction for that and to have a common view on that, but in the end, it's been invaluable, and I think not only has it been practically invaluable in terms of giving advice and support to the group, it ultimately gives a degree of confidence and strength to the proposal as it now exists. Many felt, as as I described a little earlier, that there was a need for assurances on accountability, and that came through again in the first public comment period, and therefore that needed to be bound into the way in which we worked, and assurance, and we needed confidence of the strength of that linkage. It was an apparently contradictory point about having both too much and too little detail, and that was taken on board, and I hope you'll agree is ultimately dealt with in the final proposal. I think that it reflected elements of the fact that there was too many options and choices, and to the extent that those choices were presented, they were not described in sufficient detail to firmly evaluate them. So in some senses, the public comment was premature, but in others, it was very useful to get some key areas of guidance at that point. Work continued on beyond that, and many of you might remember the extensive efforts we went to try and publish where we were in Singapore. And by that stage, what we did with Singapore was we didn't bring in a new version of the proposal. The group chose instead to come into that meeting with some key areas that that required feedback and further guidance for the work of this group going forward. That was effective in that we had a great session and got really good engagement and feedback. But we were also took some criticism for being over-focused on structural matters, how the post-transition IANA might be organized, and insufficiently focused on the actual operational specifics of performing the function. I should say that we at that point didn't have any legal counsel in place, and so to some extent were unable to take the structural matters further without proper comprehensive advice. So we took that feedback on board and really reworked the way in which the group worked into a more agile working method, and we disbanded the major themed working group, sub-working groups that we had in place, created small design teams to deal with bite-sized chunks of the proposal, and generally increased the pace of the work to 2 meetings per week. Now, when we gave this webinar this morning, one of the criticisms we received or feedbacks we received on the webinar that it was perhaps overly focused on the sort of history and process matters. That's a fair point, but I think we as chairs, Lisa, Fur and myself, feel that it's very important that in trying to convey the outcome of the work of this group, we bring you and expose participants and interested parties such as yourselves on this webinar today along the journey with us a little, because it's been a substantial journey and a comprehensive journey which has resulted in ultimately a proposal that's a reflection of both a lot of work but also some fairly hard-worked compromises. And so the danger is if we simply present you with the outcome and the proposal as it stands, the unfamiliarity with some of the key decision points and issues along the way may limit your ability to fully understand why we've arrived at where we have. So I hope you'll bear with me in taking you through some of these parts as we work through this. So when you look at it in full overview, you can start to see from around November last year when we had our first major face-to-face meeting, and you really start to see what's taken place here. December 2004, the public comment period I've referred to, all of the submissions that took place, a couple of intensive working days to process all of those through, bringing those back out in ICANN 52 that I mentioned to you a moment ago in Singapore, and then the breakdown into the new structure and the new way of working, which you see in the center of your screen, that purple square dealing with the design teams, the commencing of formal legal input, which was no mean feat to both specify, interview, and procure the well-qualified expertise we finally did, and the separation out of the focus on structure from the focus on technical and operational issues. And so you then see that work of that design team, design teams continued right through into May, and in fact some of them have continued right up until more or less the present day. And one of the critical things we had to do, which you see up at the top there, was whittle down these structural models through a series of hard work and comprehensive analysis with the help of the lawyers and the commitment of the group. So having come in with this into Singapore with these 4 models, which included the concept of inside and outside organizations, and then some form of hybrid which was added, which built in more potential structural models, we worked particularly hard and had Sidley Austin, our legal advisors, with us in Istanbul to try and whittle those down and produce something simpler that we could work with. And in the end, we settled on some variants of a so-called internal model where the post-transition IANA function would remain within ICANN, but with some quite significant changes to the current structure and associated protections. Further work on that subsequently whittled that down even further to something which is very close to what's in the final proposal at the moment, and that is a single model. We put that single model out for public comment for the second public comment period, in which you will see there in late May we received 55 submissions, including from some of you. And that brings us up to where we are today, which is with the final proposal and the prospect of submitting that to the chartering organizations, which you see in and around ICANN 53, the lower right of your screen there. I've got an echo coming through which suggests a microphone is open. If you could just ensure that's closed. Okay, apparently there's a suspicion it's coming from my own microphone. I hope not, but anyway, I'll just adjust it slightly to make sure that that's not the case. Okay, I hope that resolves it. So moving on then, we come to highlight and in particular focus on the, let's see if I can in some way modify this so there is no echo. Perhaps that works. All right. So looking at the interrelationship with the group working on accountability, this linkage and coordination with the so-called CCWG on accountability. It's fundamental that this second process, as I described earlier, runs in parallel. And what we produced here in conjunction with the group, in fact, this is really the work of the CCWG on accountability in order to ensure that this work's dependencies on, and in fact, the proposal makes it very, very clear that the work of this stewardship group, this group, is dependent on and expressly conditioned on the outcomes of the CCWG accountability's work. This feels critical because not only is it a broadly substantial and important point, but also we are operating in a slightly different time frame from the work of the CCWG on accountability. So in submitting this to the chartering organizations as we are now doing, we need those organizations to be confident and understand that this proposal does not stand alone. This proposal stands conditioned on key elements of the accountability work being undertaken and completed to support that. And those critical elements you see in the grey boxes across the centre of the screen. In particular, there is a point on the ICANN budget, and the accountability group has focused extensively on the budget, but clearly from the point of view of this group's perspective, there are some unique and specific conditions where we need to ensure that the post-transition IANA function is transparently and adequately funded with appropriate provisions for feedback should there be any concerns in that regard. One of the things, the other characteristics of this proposal that we are putting before you and communicating with you on here is that the post-transition IANA is internal but separate, isolated from ICANN, and so it is able to be both functionally and legally separate, but nevertheless strongly connected to ICANN. And therefore, it is critical to this group that there are specific accountability rights in respect of the board, because the ICANN board is the ultimate authority post-transition for this post-transition IANA. We therefore, as we move across through these different grey boxes, we look at elements of accountability that are built specifically into this proposal, which is things like dealing with the so-called IANA function review and a customer standing committee, both of which will be incorporated and therefore enshrined in the ICANN bylaws. And this concept of so-called fundamental bylaws is critical to the work of the accountability group and therefore in support of the work of this CWG on stewardship. I suppose it's important to highlight to you that there's significant overlap between the two groups. Whilst there's been regular coordination and weekly meetings between the different chairs of the stewardship and accountability groups, there is significant overlap of the members and participants, so there's been continuous cross-pollination at various levels and on various subjects. And it's our intention to continue to track and work with the CCWG to make sure that the conditions are met. So here you have in front of you on slide 8 a graphical representation of the change and the subsequent model. It's probably not completely comprehensive, but I think you should this should give you a pretty good idea of some key areas of change, introductions of new entities, and the roles of those new entities. So on the left of your screen, you have the existing and current situation as embodied in the current contract, where the IANA function is operated by IANA within ICANN through a contract with the NTIA, and NTIA provides the familiar oversight of that, both the performance of that contract and in some more general ways. Post-transition, when NTIA steps away from the situation, and this is clearly the substance and concern of this group, we end up with the new situation. And here we emphasize that there is a legally separate post-transition entity. This legally separate entity will be a corporation in its own right with its own board as required by statute, and that post-transition entity, which will now not only be functionally separate but legally separate, will have its relationship encapsulated with ICANN through a new and comprehensive contract. We have done some work on what that contract might entail by basing it on, by taking the existing contract and reworking that up into a draft term sheet, and that is attached to the proposal that you'll be able to review. The term sheet will need further work as part of the implementation and, in all likelihood, independent legal advice in order to firm it up and make sure it is sufficient to stand the test of time. But the essence of that is captured and the intent in the proposal. Clearly, the primary purpose of the post-transition IANA is to continue to service the needs of its customers. And for the purposes of this group's work, that means the name registry operators. You see those at the bottom of the right-hand portion of your screen. And those customers will, for the most part, continue to interact with IANA as they do today for the updates and technical changes that they might require on their registries. And indeed, if there is any requirement for service or service-related issue, you would expect, and we would expect, that those customers will continue to interact in a standard way with the post-transition IANA. The question is, who provides some additional oversight of that, and what if those customers are not getting the kind of service that they might expect? And that's where the customer standing committee comes into play and has a particular role to play. So this illustrates to you the customer standing committee and the lower of those two green lozenge-like or square rectangular shapes. And the customer standing committee is comprised direct customers of the IANA function, and its objective and responsibility will be to both keep an oversight of the regular functioning of the post-transition IANA and to monitor the sort of performance-related reports, compliance with service level expectations, and so on, and ensure that there is adequate and regular performance according to those, and also to be in place as an escalation point from the direct customers should they have a service issue or complaint, therefore in the escalation part. Above the CSC on the right, you see the entity referred to, which I've touched on earlier, in name at least, the IANA function review. The purpose of the IANA function review is to provide primarily a periodic review, as is common with, is fairly familiar to many of us in the ICANN and related areas, to provide a periodic and unlimited scope of review of the post-transition arrangements. Generally, we would expect that to take place at no more than 5-year intervals. There are, and it's specified as such in our proposal, and I will go into this in a little more detail later, but it's worth highlighting that in the first instance, it is specified that an IANA function review will take place 2 years after transition in order to provide overview, review, and a check on the early stages of the post-transition environment. And then you see encapsulating all of that in the outside dotted line, which is in orange, provides for the overarching accountability mechanisms, which are the work of the CCWG on accountability. So I mentioned and highlighted elements of the independent legal input. I think, and here you see in the center of the slide a schematic of the whittling down of the different structural models, which the legal input was critical in achieving. And one of the questions we expect to face is that, and you could reasonably ask, is what is the motivation and purpose for this legally separated entity? And the blue square on the top right provides some of the key points in answer to that. IANA, as it stands at the moment, is structurally separate from the ICANN operations. What does that mean? It means it has an independent staff who work in a specific portion of the building, who are in many senses separate in their day-to-day work from the rest of the ICANN operation. And that's what we mean by structural separation. But both symbolically and practically, this proposal takes that a step further by providing for the IANA functions to be housed in a separate legal entity in addition to the structural separation. Beyond that enhanced separation comes the ability to have an entity with which to contract. And as it happens, with the proposed public benefit corporation to house the post-transition IANA, we are advised that that provides a greater or a degree of safeguard against ICANN bankruptcy, in the sense that this is a separate and specifically drafted organization. In the event of a sustained and irreparable failure to perform the functions in the current configuration, it also provides for a prepackaged mechanism by which separation could occur. But I emphasize here, and you'll hear me emphasize it again and again, whilst this entity is ultimately separable, and rightly so, it would take some very specific circumstances to do that, and it seems very unlikely that the circumstances leading to that happening wouldn't be rectified through the various escalation mechanisms and rectification processes, including those coming from the work of the accountability group, such that the likelihood of this actually happening seems remote. So there have been numerous memos that dealt with a number of different areas, including governance, the nature of the post-transition IANA corporation, the scope and relevance of different board duties, the costs of dealing with this, and so on and so on. So there's been comprehensive input, such that we have a high level of confidence in the structure as proposed, and I hope in turn you too will have. Picking up then on and highlighting the post-transition entity and what its mission, scope, and scope might be, and touching on the board, which was a subject of some discussion and legal advice, the purpose or mission of the PTI is to perform all of the existing pre-transition IANA functions. That means that the existing IANA functions department and administrative staff and related resources and processes and data and so on would all be legally transferred into the new entity. And that new entity would then be funded by ICANN and characterized as an affiliate of ICANN, notwithstanding the fact that it is both functionally and legally isolated from ICANN. We then consider that by being a legally separate entity and a public benefit corporation, it needs to have its own board. And this, as I said a moment ago, attracted a lot of attention. There was attention around the size and scope
Grace, go ahead.
Just wanted to let you know that Jonathan is logging back in. He had a technical difficulty, so we're just going to pause for a minute.
Thanks all. Apologies for the glitch there. I'm not sure what happened. I remained online, but my connection to the Adobe Connect room was interrupted. So I was talking about the PTI board and the discussions around the size, scope, multi-stakeholder nature of it. This is really critical to understand. What we were advised and what we came to understand was we had chosen here a form of internal model where post-transition IANA remains bound into ICANN and fundamentally connected to ICANN. What does that mean? That means we need to rely on ICANN's accountability mechanisms as the ultimate fallback for any performance issues and problems within the post-transition IANA. That's fine. We've got some very good work going on with the CCWG to achieve that. However, in order to do that and rely on that, we need to ensure that post-transition IANA is appropriately bound into ICANN and that ICANN can be fully held accountable for post-transition IANA's performance. What that means in legal terms is that ICANN must appoint the majority of the PTI board. So it's really important to recognize that the reason for this is not so much because this is what the group felt. The group felt many different things and discussed many different possibilities. But in the end, this is about holding ICANN to account for the post-transition performance of post-transition IANA. And the net effect of that is that we end up in a position where ICANN would appoint the majority of the PTI board, and indeed we've gone so far as to suggest what that majority might look like, and you see that in front of you here. Here we propose and the executive responsible for, the ICANN executive responsible for PTI, given the technical function of the post-transition IANA, the ICANN CTO, but given the management responsibility for post-transition IANA, the IANA managing director. In order to have a degree of independent oversight in that board, in good governance best practice thinking, the group is recommending and proposing that there are two independent directors, and moreover, that those independent directors are appointed by an appropriately robust mechanism, such as, but not necessarily firmly recommended to be, the methods used by the ICANN nominating committee. In other words, if it turns out that NOMCOM is the process by which we appoint those two independent directors, so be it. But it's not prescribed that that is the only robust method for appointing them. So that deals with the post-transition IANA structure, and in particular the heartfelt area of the composition and structure of the board. I think it's fair to say that given everything we heard, the group believes that this will be an appropriate balance between tying PTI into ICANN, creating an effective management and oversight structure for PTI, and ensuring that customers get the level of service, or consumers of the service get the level of service that they require and expect. Here's a little more detail on the CSC, another key accountability and oversight mechanism for the post-transition IANA, clearly established to perform to provide oversight of the operational responsibilities that were previously provided by the U.S. government, and to ensure continue an ongoing satisfactory or better performance of the IANA naming functions. So at a high level, that's about regular monitoring of the functions against the service level targets and picking up on remedial actions should there be performance issues on behalf of the NAMES community, and including that in advice back to the IANA functions operator as necessary. The structure is set up as some members and liaisons appointed by their respective communities in accordance with their chosen internal processes, and members are in place for 2 years with the options of a two-year renewal and a chair elected on an annual basis. The intention is that they'll meet once per month and provide publicly published minutes and the more general updates are provided no less than three times per year. You can see there the composition is planned to be two GTLD registry operators, two CCTLD registry operators, an additional TLD representative, and a liaison from IANA, and then a potential liaison from each of the ICANN SOs at ACs. When we looked at the composite slide of the different functions earlier, I touched on the and went into some detail on the IANA functions review. In particular, I focused on the review cycles and the fact that the first review would occur no more than 2 years post-transition, and then every on a five-year cycle thereafter. What I didn't really mention, and what is critical to mention, is the concept of a so-called special review. And what is in place here is the opportunity to invoke a special review of the IANA function under certain circumstances. That is to say, those special circumstances are very likely to be in the event of some form of sustained inadequacy in the performance of the post-transition IANA. And in order to do so, there is a requirement that whilst the Customer Standing Committee may be of the view that it needs to escalate a position, it would only be able to escalate this into a special IANA functions review if such a process had first been checked and put on by both the CCNSO and the GNSO councils. In fact, we discussed this wording in some detail today. Each of the CCNSO and GNSO councils would have to vote on such, and each would have to vote with a supermajority vote to trigger a special IANA functions review. It's not prescribed what that IANA the scope of that IANA functions review either. It's left open to that multi-stakeholder body, and you can see the membership described below as to how that group would be made up. And this is essential for those of you interested in the multi-stakeholder oversight of this, specifically the post-transition IANA function. This takes place via either the regular and periodic IANA functions review and or when and if a special review is invoked. One potential outcome from an IANA functions review is the prospect of a separation of the post-transition IANA and in those circumstances, that recommendation would have to be picked up then by a separation cross-community working group. It hasn't been specified exactly how that separation cross-community working group is comprised, to the best of my memory, although I stand to be corrected there. I should check that in the proposal. Let me not go any further with that. But there would be a particular cross-community working that would deal with that in the event that there was a recommendation for separation. So the final slide here then, having dealt with the structure, the board, the accountability mechanisms, and the operation, what this set of slides probably doesn't do, although I have touched on it in speaking to it on a few occasions, is the consideration that was given to escalation should there be performance issues throughout. And that is dealt with from customer, through customer standing committee, through relationship with the operator, through the board, through ICANN, through the accountability mechanisms, through the IANA function reviews. There are numerous possibilities for oversight, escalation, and remedial action to ensure that the global internet community that relies on the adequate and effective functioning of the service has many layers of recourse to deal with. So that brings us to slide 13 and where we are today. You have before you, or you will very shortly have, the final proposal, and these slides speak to that final proposal, which is due to be transferred to the chartering organizations of the CWG today, and those chartering organizations then have the time to review and ideally approve this proposal such that we can submit this to the ICG post ICANN 53 in Buenos Aires, and then the process goes on as we discussed in the opening slides. I think I've spoken enough. Let me hand over to you for questions and comments. The first question I saw came up in the chat. You are welcome to put up your hand, in which case in the Adobe Connect room by using the hand up icon in the top left-hand portion of your screen. If you do that, your microphone will be enabled and you'll be able to ask a question via audio. Your alternative is to pose the question, as has been done by Anne in the chat on the lower right, and we'll deal with that. So it says, regarding the composition of the board, what exactly is the nature of the position described as IANA Managing Director, and to whom does that report, that person report? How is compensation determined for that person? I'm familiar with some elements of that, but IANA Managing Director is really refers to, that may not be, I must say I'm not clear whether that is a job title in actuality. What it is, what it represents is the most senior operational member of staff or member of staff of the IANA function, the manager of the IANA function. Now, in terms of reporting lines, my understanding is that today, and I don't see any reason why that would change, although it's not specifically in the purview of this group, is that that IANA function is overseen by one of the executive managers of ICANN, I believe, and so the intention there is that that most senior operating person, the IANA managing director, and the executive within ICANN responsible for the IANA function are on the PTI board. In terms of compensation, so that's Elise today, Elise Geary. Thank you, Grace. And in terms of compensation, I would expect that's currently an ICANN internal process. I know compensation for some ICANN employees is public based on the reporting requirements, or that's what I gather via hearsay. I haven't actually looked into it, but I don't know how compensation specifically is determined. That's beyond what I can answer. Please feel free to pose any questions in the chat if you feel something has been not adequately described or is unanswered, or feel free to raise your hand on the left. There will, of course, be plenty of opportunity for engagement on this and related subjects. In fact, on the of the ICANN meeting in Buenos Aires, I'll just check the date exactly when that is, that Monday, that is the 22nd, immediately after the opening ceremony, there is a high-profile session which will deal with both the work of this group and significantly the work of the accountability group, and be an opportunity to engage with that, those both works and the linkage between them. There's a question in the chat about when the 14-day period ends. Technically, since the ICANN 53 completes on the 25th of June, and there you have it from Grace, the 14-day period runs 11th to the 25th of June. And therefore, I mean, this is designed to ensure that each of the chartering organizations has the opportunity to not only review the proposal, but to discuss it during a face-to-face ICANN meeting, and that's what is intended here. That's a really good question from Anders in the chat about what are the main developments in comparison to the last draft proposal. I don't have that. That was asked previously, and it does highlight that that's an important point. Of course, there was a draft proposal that was put out for public comment initially a while back now, which was substantially different. And then there was, as I discussed on the sort of route through slides, but really my sense of this question is what's the difference between now and the response you made to the public comments? And we really worked systematically through those public comments. And to the extent that you put a public comment in, you can review the public comment tool, and Grace may be able to provide a link to that so that you can see exactly how we responded. But in many ways, it was rather than a fundamental change, which I would say has taken place in some of the earlier drafts in and around public comment one and so on, it has more been tweaking and polishing and clarifying. I mean, for example, just to give you one concrete example, the PTI board was not specified at all in the from memory in the draft proposal that went out pre-public comment, and is now clearly specified in this version. But hopefully we can take this feedback on board and produce some sort of summary there of the key points. Anne asks if it would be accurate to say that the members, as proposed in the new accountability structure, would have no authority over the new IANA board. Well, that's a really interesting point. I mean, no direct authority, but clearly, and this is a layman's interpretation, should the membership model proposed become accepted, those members have a role and function in relation to ICANN and its governance structures. And of course, with the structure we have proposed here, PTI is an affiliate of ICANN and is controlled by ICANN. So to that extent, members have indirect authority over the new IANA board, but not direct. So I think that's my best attempt at explaining that, but it may be that that's one for the lawyers. And I should say that the lawyers that have advised this group are the same lawyers, for the most part, that have advised the CCWG, although there have been some others engaged by the CCWG as well, both sets of which will be represented by some members of their law firm in Buenos Aires. Lip Shepherd asks if we believe now that there is full integration with CWG IANA and the overall CCWG ICANN accountability process. Yes, I think there is, for a couple of reasons, really. One is that which I just described a moment ago, the interlinking of the affiliate to the parent. And two is the work that we did, together with assistance from the legal advisors, to craft the language of this proposal such that it is clear that this proposal is dependent and conditioned upon the work that we anticipate to be being produced or to be the outcomes of the CCWG. Good. Thank you, Philip and Anne and others, for some interesting questions. And Greg, for you confirming my understanding. I missed the question on the parallel work between the NTIA and the Root Zone Manager for the transition. I can't comment on that. I'm not privy to what is going on there, but I would expect that there is something going on. That's probably as much as I can say there. Peter, that's a good question. You ask whether the chartering organizations have really a binary choice or whether there is they could make a conditional approval. I suppose I could answer that in different ways. From a chair's perspective and a weary chair's perspective, someone who's worked very, very hard on this for a long period of time, the easy route would be if they simply approved it. The most difficult route would be if they rejected it. Somewhere in between might be a form of conditional approval. I might expect that one or more of the chartering organizations might underline their expectation that of the conditionality of this proposal on the CCWG's work. But in so doing, they would really be doing that for, in my view, I guess, the optics of that, reinforcing what is already the case. So if they were to just approve it point blank, so to speak, they would, in effect, be approving that conditionality in any event. Taking that further, well, of course, ultimately, they are at liberty to specify the conditions, but the more conditional, you know, I'm slightly flippant when I say the more work. It's more than that, though. It may make it more difficult to integrate with the other proposals, to transmit in a timely fashion. So clearly, what I think we would hope for is active and effective discussions between the chairs and, in fact, the members of this group and all of their organizations to help clarify and, if necessary, and discuss and understand where concerns would be and ideally obviate those through careful explanation and discussion. And I note that Grace has said you're now free to independently scroll through the slides as you wish if you need an aide memoir to ask any questions or make any comments. All right, well, we created a 90-minute slot in order that we were in a position to be able to accommodate as many questions or issues arose, but typically we expect that we might be able to complete something like this within an hour. I'm sure all of you have plenty to be getting on with. I know I certainly do. So I'll just pause for one more minute and see if anything else comes up in the form of questions. And if not, I'll leave you to take these slides at liberty and to peruse them in your own time, in addition to the main proposal, which is due out imminently. And we can talk about this more in Buenos Aires for those of you who are fortunate enough to be traveling there and through other online fora for those of you who are not. Okay, thank you very much for your diligent attention and interesting questions. Really appreciate the attention you've paid. And I do notice that Thomas Rickert, one of the co-chairs of the CCWG, points out that he would have concerns about the manageability of conditional approval and potential contradictions and challenges that that might produce. So, yes, thank you. And, of course, as Avery highlights in the chat, anyone who is not able to travel will be able to participate remotely by all of the various mechanisms that ICANN goes to great lengths to ensure are available to the global community in order that you can and are able to participate. Thank you. Thank you to my co-chair, Lisa Furr. Thank you to ICANN staff for all of their support in this. Thank you to all of you for listening, and of course to the co-chairs on the CCWG group with whom we've worked very closely and have been diligent enough to attend these two webinars today. Goodbye, and look forward to meeting up with you all in person or online soon. Thanks again.